Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to The Boundless Show. I am Lisa Anderson. Let me give you a little idea of what is coming up later on for our inbox. Dr. Greg Smalley answers a question from a guy who really wants to be married, but he has a disability and is frustrated and feeling like God maybe doesn't care about his story anymore. What does that look like? How does he trust God in the midst of that? And then for our culture segment, Joy Beth Smith, editor of Boundless. You remember maybe on the blog when she came and I had the opportunity to interview her and ask her a bunch of questions. Well, she's going to kind of turn the tables this time around and do a little update with me behind the scenes of what is going on in my life. Who knows what in the world she's asking? You're just going to have to listen to hear it. And then she will actually also be hosting our roundtable on why you will marry the wrong person. And we're going to go ahead and turn it over to her and see what she has to say with our panel.
Hey guys, it's JB. I'm filling in for Lisa this week at the roundtable, and we have with us three of our summer interns, which is super exciting. We have Sierra, Michaela, and Derek. Hey guys.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
So this week we are talking about a New York Times article that came out, and it says, "You will marry the wrong person." Which is super interesting because you always think that you're going to marry the one or the right person or the absolutely perfect person. But this article claims that we're all going to marry the wrong person. And I just want to talk about it this week. So what were your thoughts after reading the article?
Okay, I think for me personally, I thought the article was really relatable for one. But my kind of main idea that I grasped from the article was that the whole concept behind why you will marry the wrong person is because we have like an idea that there is like this the one person and they're perfect and they're like your complete match in every like way. And then we end up in relationships or we marry that person and it's just not like that at all. So
why do you think it's so easy to believe in the one? Like, I feel like that's something even the church kind of has expectations about. Maybe not openly, but, you know, you're like your other half, the person who's going to complete you. We even use that language in the church. So why is that? Why are we drawn to that kind of that idea?
I think it's a comforting idea. I think I don't think to any degree anyone likes to, oh, yeah, let me talk about how much work this was and how hard it was and on just all this different stuff. And I don't think marriage is excluded from that. Kind of that whole saying that anything that's worth doing is hard work, you know, is like requires hard work. So I think it's a nice idea of like this easiness that it's just there's just one person. You just have to find them. And once you find them, like you guys won't ever fight. You guys won't ever struggle. And just with human nature, that's just, it's impossible. And then you have all these people that end up so disappointed or just so turned off from the idea of marriage or just even being in relationships at all.
Derek, what do you think?
I think that our culture loves to find pleasure in things and satisfaction. And when you're dating a person or you have an interest in the person, you can really only think of the way that that person can satisfy your needs or you can find pleasure in them. And so when you finally marry an individual or someone that you're interested in, you see the faults in them and you see that they're not as perfect or they can disappoint you. They won't always meet your satisfactions. And so that's where the article says, you will marry the wrong person is what you want in a person that isn't always going to be there.
But. And you're in a relationship right now?
I am, yes.
Yes. Way to go, Derek.
Thanks.
And so for how long have you been dating?
More than a year and a half.
Okay, so long enough to get past the like sales and marketing pitches.
Exactly, yeah.
And so what is that process? Like when you start seeing, like you have the butterflies in the beginning and oh, yeah, they're so perfect and all of that. But how does a relationship change once you start seeing the actual like flaws and weaknesses in other people?
I think there develops a level of maturity both for you and your interest, and you identify where they struggle and what their weaknesses are, and you try to encourage them. Something that I think I try to do is not see her first as my girlfriend, but as a daughter of Christ. And when you identify that she's a daughter of Christ and she's made in God's image, you identify that you can encourage her in walking with the Lord. And of course, she's going to be sinful. She's going to disappoint you. But you can turn back and show her love and grace, and she does the same for me. So
that's awesome. And so, Sierra, for you, when we're thinking about like marrying the wrong person and having to give up our ideals, how do you balance this idea of like, I'm going to marry someone who's flawed and has a sin nature and will disappoint me versus like, I still have to have certain standards that I'm looking for in a potential mate?
Well, I think a big thing for that for me is sometimes you just have to give people a chance, maybe that you wouldn't have thought of at first. One thing that I realized is through it, maybe you do gain a relationship with that person as more than a friend. And sometimes you know, as you get to know that person, you realize that maybe it's not, you know, what you're looking for in a spouse. And you just gain a friendship with them. But when I was reading that article, I was reminded of like when I was in middle school and all those lists you would make, and you had a certain amount of physical attributes and a certain amount of, you know, like just
place
personality.
Piano.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and they have to have blue eyes or this, that, and the other thing. And that when you have those types of things, like it's a little ridiculous, honestly, and you're not going to meet someone who fits all of those. And if that's your only criteria, then you're not going to marry the wrong person. You're not going to marry anyone. You're not going to find someone to fit that. But like you said, it's definitely still important to have standards, like absolutes that you would not compromise on. Like the biggest one being that they share the same faith as you. I think that that's really, really important. And then on other things, you know, it's good to have people in your life that maybe you don't see eye to eye with on all the same issues. And so, yeah.
So what are some other like definitive standards of if we're throwing out the whole list and he doesn't have to play piano tomorrow and, you know, blue eyes, brown eyes, it doesn't matter. What else is it that should make the list for sure? No questions asked.
I think something is probably the same goals for the future, the same ideas of family. I would imagine it would be very difficult if you've had it set in your head that you're going to have kids and you're marrying someone who doesn't want that at all. That's something that could potentially be worked through. But at the same time, like, I think having that in the beginning, you know,
it makes your life easier.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
I think for me, with the relationship that I'm in right now, besides like your definitive standards, I think as far as like the whole list thing, like, yeah, that needs to be thrown out, because then when you get into a relationship and you guys are both actively trying to make it work and you're invested in each other and it's not about you, it's about the other person, that other person kind of makes that list. Like, here's this awesome person that I'm in a relationship with, and now this list that I didn't have, now I have all these things that I love about this person and other things that are about them that challenge me and help me grow, and other things that, you know, I can help them grow in. And it's kind of looking at it from that point of service. But I think a big thing for me, aside from the definites that Sierra said, was finding someone that is willing to do that. Because there's a lot of people that they just aren't willing to be flexible. They're not willing to grow, not willing to actually like kind of proceed forward. They just kind of want to stay where they're at, and they want someone that is going to stay right there. But that's not how life works. Everyone's constantly growing and maturing and just learning new things. So I think the number one important thing, aside from all those, from like faith and family, is finding someone that's willing to do that with you, that's willing to like grow and willing to take into consideration your feelings, and you're willing to do the same for that person.
Kind of someone who's going to be in the trenches with you, like working
Absolutely.
Alongside you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I heard this advice one time, and it was settle, but don't be stupid. And so we're always taught, and especially like the older you get such conflicting advice as a single of like, your standards are too high and that's why you're still single. Or like, maybe you aren't being too picky. Maybe you are just having standards and someone will come along and don't lower them, you know? And so I feel like it's really hard to keep a balance of you're going to have to give up certain things, but there are these like non-negotiables, you know? One of the hardest things in that discussion, though, is that when sin in someone else's life, like the person that you're dating, becomes apparent, how is it that you kind of navigate that as a relationship? Like, is there sin that we should like draw a line at? You know, is it as long as they're working through the sin that's okay? You know, I feel like I have friends who it's, you know, when the mask is taken off and they start seeing not only just weaknesses, but definitely like sin issues in someone's life, that it becomes a lot harder then. And like the reality of I'm marrying a sinful person, what is it that I'm willing to kind of negotiate on?
I think that when you identify a sin in a person, especially someone that you love, you need to encourage them and understand that we are all sinners, and this is just one area that they need to work on. And then you need to make sure that they are focusing on getting help, whether if it's not just help from you, then make sure that they're getting therapy or professional help from a counselor or something. So, I mean, there's so many areas that we all sin in, and everyone has a different issue. But certainly if your loved one is struggling with something, make sure that they're seeking help and growing in the Lord.
And I think kind of on that note, another thing that is really important is to make sure that that person is pursuing their relationship with Christ, and they're not pursuing Christ because of you.
Hmm.
You know, so I think as far as like just deciding like what sins you're okay with in another person, I think a big thing is that that they need to be continuing after Christ and continuing after healing and restoration. Because of their own relationship with God, because God is their number one motivating factor. And as much as they may care about you or love you, you are completely second and on a completely different list because God has that number one place. And I think that question kind of dissolves a little bit in its harshness and its kind of difficultness to process when that priority is established.
And I think we've seen this, right? Like, have you guys, can you think of a specific instance where it's like one of them has reformed because of the other? And I think especially maybe when I was a little younger, or the pressure at Christian colleges. I don't know who here goes to a Christian college.
I do.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, awesome. But I feel like there's especially this pressure there, you know, of like, I am living up to expectations that I think you have as opposed to expectations that I have for myself. So how is it that you guys like kind of see that play out maybe on your campuses or in your in friends' relationships? You can say friends instead of your own, but how is it that you guys may have seen that?
Like, I've had like a couple friends before like get into like relationships with someone, and then it just kind of becomes like this nitpicky thing. Well, I don't like that you do this. Well, I don't like that you do this. And I don't, and then whoever's on the receiving end of that, whether it's both parties or just one, they constantly are like playing catch up. Well, I like this person so much, and if I just like change this, or if I just like get over this. But your motivation can't be another person, because that person will fail you. Just bottom line reality. And so that can't be your motivation. I think like personally with like different friends that have like struggled with like porn addictions, and different like either parties that have gotten into relationships, and then the other person is like, I'm absolutely not okay with this. And then they try to change because of that other person. It's not because Christ is saying to them like, I have a better plan for you and a better purpose, and I love you and I don't want you to be bound
like
by
genuine
this.
Conviction.
Yeah. That it's, you know, it just comes from like, oh, well, they say I shouldn't, you know, and then it's just, you just see these people just struggle, and then they end up, those relationships almost every time end up breaking up. And
that's the thing, right? Yeah. Is that it never sticks.
And then those people end up being like just more broken and feeling like they're just that much more like not worthy of like God's love. And that's kind of the main thing, is it's, if we are anything, we have to exemplify God's love to all people.
Yeah. And how disappointing. I mean, I can't imagine being in a relationship where I was only like living up to a certain standard because of the person I was with, and constantly feeling like I was disappointing them because I wasn't genuinely that person. You know, like, you're never going to be able to hit that standard without the Holy Spirit like guiding you and helping you. And even then, there's grace. Praise the Lord. So. Okay, so one of the questions that the article brings up, which I think is really fun, is that he thinks that a relationship would actually be stronger if on the first date you sat down and said, what kind of crazy are you? What's your crazy? How are you crazy? Let's talk about it. Because having that vulnerability in the beginning of just no holds bar, we're coming in and we're just being exactly who we are. And I think that there's something really admirable about that, but I think it also opens up some problems, you know? So what would you guys think if someone on a first date was like, what's your crazy? What's wrong with you? Tell me all your secrets.
I'd probably pick a really mild one. Like, oh, sometimes I can get invested in TV shows a lot and I cry. Like, I wouldn't pick like my actual like crazy thing.
It's like in a job interview where someone's like, what's your greatest weakness? And you're like, I'm too punctual.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But I mean, I see where he's coming from, but at the same time, I don't know. First date, that's kind of, I don't think I'd want to go there.
I think that, like, a trust needs to develop, and you can open something up on the first date and actually be vulnerable with them, but there still needs to be maturity that develops over the duration of your relationship, where you guys begin to open up more and more to each other, and then you see things that your significant other struggles with, and it's an ongoing process. It's not just a one time, these are my sins, this is what I struggle with, and then there's forgiveness and then it's done. We're sinful every day. It's our nature. So it's something that you continually need to work on.
And I think that what's really hard is that you do want to be honest, you know, like you want to start with like a precedence of honesty in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how much do you tell, how quickly, how soon in a relationship? And I think that that is such a hard balance. And I think honestly that it's different with age. Like at 27, I found people to be a lot more straightforward much earlier in a relationship than I did at 22. Not that I went on a lot of dates at 22. But that's okay. So what do you guys think as far as like how much you should divulge and how quickly, and maybe what are some good parameters that we could talk about as far as knowing what's wise here?
I think a really good parameter that I actually like utilize in my own life as far as like what to disclose is if it's something that only like your siblings know or only your parents know, something like that, or your best friend, it's probably not something to tell on a first date. Probably safe right there. But if it's something like if you again talk to like that sibling, or I have two sisters, so that's something that I do. But if like you, your best friend or whatever, your parents, and you're like, okay, so what am I really like, kind of thing, and just kind of those first kind of few things that they tell you that you know are still like, yeah, I could work on those, but, you know, it's also not, like, you know, all the skeletons in the closet or whatnot. I think that's probably a good parameter, too, for, like, a first date. Okay, yeah, like, maybe you should know this about me. It's just really about what that person needs to know. Like, you should be real with them, but they don't need to know anything they don't need to know. You don't know if this is going to a second date. Calm down. It's okay.
I've seen a couple close friends share too much too fast, and it doesn't work well for either person. And so, like Michaela was saying, the whole skeletons in the closet thing, there's stuff from your past that, yeah, if you're going to be in a serious relationship with a person, they need to know, but they don't need to know it right away. You know, that might be something that comes with time. And as you get to know that person, you know, then you'll probably have a better idea of when to share that information.
And I think that a lot of times online dating can kind of feed this a little bit in maybe an unhealthy way if you let it. And that's this idea of like you feel kind of a false intimacy, you know, like it's just you and this other person. Late night phone calls do this too. If all of a sudden you're like find yourself on the phone with a boy at 11 p.m., like you're saying things and you're like, I can't believe I just told him that, you know. And I think that it's because there's this false sense of intimacy and it's late or you're online. And like if I type it out and I'm like telling him my whole testimony, like it feels like a good thing. Like we have a connection and he's accepting me, but at the same time it almost is sabotaging success that you could have in your relationship if you had just paced yourself a little better.
Absolutely.
And now there aren't like four guys out there who know your whole testimony and probably shouldn't. So it's really tough sometimes. So there is this question on eHarmony profile, and it is, what is your greatest fear about marriage? And one of the answers is fear of marrying the wrong person, fear of growing apart, fear of all of these things. And so I like to send that question because it helps me know if someone has this fear of marrying the wrong person, you know. And I think it's a legitimate fear, but I also think that like a lot of what we've discussed, at the end of the day, the wrong person can be the right person, maybe, you know, like the wrong person is someone that you can still choose to love and that you can still choose to be sanctified with in a really awesome way. So any closing thoughts on the wrong person that you definitely shouldn't marry, or maybe you should?
I think just have your basic like guidelines down. And again, like Sierra said, very basic. Like be open to what different people have to offer, but also take enough stock and value in yourself to know if it's something that like, oh, can I see myself spending yada, yada, yada years with? And if the answer is no, then send that person on their merry way. And if the answer is yes, recognize that marriage isn't a fairy tale. It's hard work, but it's the best work.
It's hard work, but it's the best work. That is awesome. I think we're going to end on that. Well, guys, it has been awesome. Thanks so much for coming in. We're glad you came.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.